Hi, welcome to Serial Sisters, a podcast where my sister and I tell each other true crime stories. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Devonna.
And this week, Devonna has a story for me.
Okay, so this week I'm going to do the abduction of Dorothy Jane Scott.
Okay.
Have you heard of it? Okay, no?
I don't think so.
So it's in California, in Anaheim.
Okay.
So for months, she had been receiving phone calls at her workplace from the same mysterious admirer. The voice sounded vaguely familiar, but she couldn't place where she had heard it before. And sometimes he expressed fawning adoration, and other times, resentment and violence. And He let her know that he was trailing her wherever he went, wherever she went. And he described details of her daily activities to prove it.
Maybe so, I do know this one.
Okay.
Sorry, no. As you're going,
no, it's okay.
Maybe I've heard it. It's all right.
So, the stalker, alarmed her so much that she was just like, I'm not going to deal with this. Or I'm going to deal with it in a different way. And she started taking karate classes. And she considered
Good for her.
Buying a handgun.
Mm-hmm.
But she didn't want to buy a handgun because she also lived with her little son.
Yeah.
So she was kind of scared that he would get a hold of it.
Mm-hmm.
So she was a 32-year-old single mother who had lived with her 4-year-old son at her aunt's house in Stanton, which is a small city between Anaheim and Garden Grove.
Mm-hmm.
And she was employed as a secretary for Swinger's Psych Shop in Anaheim,
mm-hmm.
which was also, attached to Custom John's Head Shop.
Okay.
So, and the Swingers and the Custom Johns were jointly owned services of the area's hippie culture.
Mm-hmm.
So a person could go, go get a water pipe at one of the stores and go soak in the posters in the other black light room.
Nice.
So, which is just, genius.
Mm-hmm.
So Dorothy worked in the backroom office, and she led a life that was far less colorful than the tie-dye shirts and multicolored bongs that were sold at the store.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't really seem like a lady who would, you would peg to work at one of these stores.
Mm-hmm.
And one friend described her as, as dull as a phone book.
Okay.
Which is, not very nice to say about your friend, but...
No. Especially after she's gone.
Yeah. So, she never left the house for recreation, and she was religious. She rarely dated, if ever, and she worked from morning until night, leaving her son in the care of her parents.
Okay.
And she was a dependable worker, and by all accounts, a kind-hearted and compassionate person.
Mm.
So, on May 28th, 1980, Dorothy dropped off her son at her parents' house and headed back to work for a meeting. And as the meeting began... She noticed that a fellow employee, Conrad Brostron, I think is how you say his name, looked ill at ease. And the meeting marched on, and he couldn't sit still. And just something wasn't right with him. And she noticed that he had an ever-deepening red streak on his arm.
Hmm.
And so she convinced him to let her take him to the emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
And another coworker, whose name was Pam Head, which is just terrible name.
Well, but it's perfect for where she works, at a head shop.
I know. Oh, it's just perfect. So she offered to accompany them.
Mm-hmm.
They stopped briefly at Dorothy's parents' house to check on Sean, which was her son, before heading to the UCI Medical Center. And then once there, the doctors actually decided that the guy's arm was infected due to a spider bite.
Due to a what bite?
A spider bite.
Oh, okay.
So, as the guy was treated, Dorothy and Pam stayed in the lobby for him. And finally, Conrad was discharged and went to fill his prescriptions in the pharmacy line. And Pam waited with him while Dorothy volunteered to pull the car around in front. So, she walked out into the parking lot and her coworkers waited for her.
Mm-hmm.
The guy gets his prescription and he and Pam looked out front expecting to see Dorothy's car, but it wasn't there. So they stepped outside, and still, they saw no sign of her. Their puzzlement grew into impatience, which grew into concern when they saw her car approach. But it approached them at a relatively high speed, and a speed that didn't suggest that she intended on stopping.
Mm-hmm.
And blinded by the high beams, Pam and Conrad waved their arms, but the car made a sharp right turn and raced out of the parking lot.
Jesus.
And of course, this is before cell phones, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not like they could even just call her and be like, hey, what the fuck?
Mm-hmm.
So they run after the car, and its headlights suddenly went out, and it left the parking lot and vanished. So struggling to make sense of why their friend had abandoned them, they considered that maybe she had gone to get her son.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, maybe she had remembered an obligation she had just, like, forgotten and, like, all of a sudden remembered.
Yeah.
But then an hour passed, and then two. And the police were notified, but they didn't see any reason for alarm, which is just kind of strange, because, like, she just doesn't seem, again, like the kind of lady that would just abandon her two coworkers.
No, she doesn't, but it's also the 80s, and, well, we need 48 hours before she's considered missing, otherwise she's just a flaky woman.
Right, yeah, she just, like, ran off.
Mm-hmm.
So Pam asked Dorothy's parents to ask if she'd picked up Sean, but they hadn't seen her all evening.
Mm-hmm.
Several hours later, calls for alarm were certainly raised when Dorothy's car was found abandoned some 10 miles away in a Santa Alley alleyway, burning, and no trace of Dorothy was found. In the following days, the police investigated Dorothy's disappearance. They advised her father, Jacob Scott, to keep a tight lip for now. So no newspapers, no television reporters, no media of any kind.
Yeah.
But that all changed when, a week later, the telephone rang at the Scott's house. And Dorothy's mother, Vera, answered. A male voice asked if she was related to Dorothy Scott. After Vera said yes, the caller stated, "I've got her," and hung up.
The Another fuck?
So, like, just fuck you. Don't call the house and say that bullshit.
Right? It's not even like, oh, I'll give her back for this amount of money, blah, blah, blah. Just, I got her. Fuck you.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Click. I've got her. Ugh. So then, another week passed. And Jacob Scott had run out of patience, that, like any patience that he had pretended to have. He contacted a Santa Ana register, and they ran a story about his daughter's disappearance.
Mm-hmm.
On the day the story ran, a call came in at the desk of the Santa Ana register editor, Pat Riley. And "I've killed her," the male caller told Roy. "I killed Dorothy Scott. She was my love. I caught her cheating with another man. She denied having someone else. I killed her." So he calls and says all that bullshit. So the caller also provided details that wouldn't have been known to a prank caller. Details that hadn't been printed. Mm-hmm. So he knew that Dorothy had been wearing a red scarf that night. He knew about the coworker's spider bite. He claimed that Dorothy had called him to tell him that she was at the UCI Medical Center.
Mm-hmm.
However, Pam insisted that this couldn't have been the case, as Dorothy never left her presence throughout the evening. Except once, to use the bathroom right before heading out to the parking lot.
Well, I mean, maybe she used a payphone on her way to the bathroom or to the parking lot.
That is probably true, but, like, you would think it's a hospital, so, like, there's probably a hallway that you can, like, I don't know, look down. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like bullshit because this dude seems like a crazy psycho, but I'm not saying it's not with the outside the realm of possibility for her to have made a phone call.
Made a phone call, yeah. So, investigators also checked out Sean's father, oh god, the son.
Oh, okay.
He had an airtight alibi. So, he was at home in Missouri on the night Dorothy disappeared. They questioned everybody at the psych shop, and then they questioned them again. Mm-hmm. But then, the consensus was that since Dorothy worked out of public view, it's unlikely her harasser would have been a customer. And police looked at the area's sex offenders. They also poked into her social circle for potential enemies or even questionable characters, but they didn't find any.
Mm-hmm.
Dorothy's parents consulted a psychic, and then another, and the police also ended up enlisting a psychic.
Jesus.
So leads fizzled and the case cooled, but the menacing phone calls kept coming.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every Wednesday for 4 years, the phone rang at the Scott's home.
That's awful. Yeah.
For 4 years.
That's just awful.
And the calls came during the day when Dorothy's mother was home alone. The caller would either ask, "Is Dorothy there?" or reassert that he had killed her. He would say, "I've got
dick.
Her." Yeah.
He's the worst. Like, I hate him.
The, like, "Is Dorothy there?" thing is so fucked. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, I hate that. So the police bugged the Scott's phone. And so they have the caller's voice, like, on tape.
Mm-hmm.
But no one recognized the voice, which was gruff and plainly disguised.
Mm-hmm.
The Scotts had the lines tapped, but the caller would never stay on the line long enough for the call to be traced, because, of course, it's like 1980, so.
Yeah. Takes you like 10 minutes to trace a call.
Yeah. So the calls finally stopped in April 1984 when Jacob and not Vera answered the nighttime call from their unknown tormentor. Jacob speculated that the caller probably assumed that new residents were now living in the house, which I don't really know why they say that, but I wonder if, like, maybe if it was somebody that Dorothy knew, and if she did call him or call the person, like, maybe it was someone that the dad would recognize, like the voice.
Or it was just more fun for him to torture the mom. I mean,
that too, which is so
fun. He's just like, fuck you, and then it's a dude, and he's like, well, this isn't fun for me, so he quits.
Yeah, oh, that's awful. I hate that more, maybe.
I know, that's awful. He's a dickhole. I told you I hated him.
Oh, so you're really going to hate the rest of this, too. So 3.5 Great. Months later, a construction worker happened upon a skeletal remains in some brush off Santa Ana Canyon Road in Anaheim. Those remains belonged to a dog. However, beneath the dog, covered lightly with soil, were human bones. A pelvis, an arm, two thighs, and a skull. And along with the bones were a turquoise ring and a watch, which had stopped at 12:30 a.m. May 29th, 1980.
Oh.
Just so awful. So Vera Scott verified the turquoise ring as belonging to her daughter. A week later, the remains were identified as those of Dorothy Jane Scott. So at least, like, they found her. They may not have answers as to how or who, which is not as great, but I'm glad they found her.
For sure.
So after the announcement ran in the newspapers, the Scott family received two more calls from a now familiar voice asking, is Dorothy home?
Fuck him.
Yep. So Jacob Scott died in 1994, 1 week shy of his 70th birthday, and Vera Scott died in 2002, both without knowing the identity of the man who killed their daughter. The man who called them on a weekly basis for the better part of 4 years.
God, I hate him.
It's just crazy. Like, I cannot believe that he played that game with them for so long.
So wait, are there any theories as to who did it?
Like, I've read a little bit more about it, and, like, they don't really have anything solid. They think that there was someone else that she worked with that maybe is a suspect. But again, like, they just don't have any solid evidence.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That's awful.
It was a pretty bad one. But the calls just got me, because I was just like, why would you want to keep it dragging out for that long?
Because he's the worst. He's a dickhole. I hate him. I don't know who he is.
And also, it's something that, like, you couldn't do now.
Yeah. Like, yeah, because who the fuck picks up their cell phone when they're like, I don't know that number.
Right. Or, like, they could find out exactly where you are if you call someone on your cell phone. So, yeah. That is the story I had for you this week.
Well, that's upsetting. Thank you.
Shorter one, but
shorter and yet still devastating.
Still sad. Still so much misogyny. Because, like, if it was someone that she was dating, because she wasn't said to have dated anyone.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so weird.
And you think that they would know if she was dating someone, because she has a 4-year-old son. Someone's got to be watching that kid in order for her to go out on dates.
Right. And, like, you know, if they think that somebody took her in the parking lot, which is the most plausible thing.
Yeah, that seems like where it would have had to be.
Right. Was it just some random person?
Well, how would it have been someone random if they're still calling her parents for 4 years?
That's, yeah, how to...
And had been calling her at work and tormenting her at work.
Yeah. I don't know. It's so crazy.
Or was it two separate people? And the stalker calls and the calling her parents are actually by someone else who's just playing off of it. And somebody else just grabbed her and it was completely random that she happened to be having something else going on.
That is a good theory. Huh. I wonder.
Yeah. I think I had heard this one before, but it's still nuts to me.
Yeah, it is. I try not to do the most well-known, but I wasn't sure.
Yeah. I don't think it's super well known. I think it's just weirdos like us that have known stuff like this. Thanks for listening. You can email us at serialsisters@outlook.com, and you can find us on Instagram and Twitter @serialsisters. Bye.
Bye.